Vardian, get in. Close the door.
Sure. Hey, Dylan. You've been busy up here.
Yeah, this is what work looks like. I've been trying to figure out a solution on the monster ecology problem. I need a couple of sigils in the right spots.
Dylan, are you sure about this?
I wasn't entirely convinced magic existed until last week, Aram. I'm not certain about anything.
I assume this is one of those things you weren't quite sure about?
I mean, I could probably get better materials for this if we had more funding.
Well, for $2 a month, supporters on patreon.com/killeverymonster get access to ad-free episodes as they are released. For $5, you'll get those ad-free episodes early, along with audio DM notes featuring Dylan and I recapping what went into producing each one.
For $10 a month, you'll get audio and video DM's notes, along with extended cutting room floor content that didn't quite make it into the main episode.
We also have a $25 investor level and a $50 producer level. Support at these tiers ensures we can continue to produce Kill Every Monster and allows us to hire more talent from the community. Both levels also get a personalized shout-out at the end of every episode, and producers get a welcome pack of each official Dead Ghost and Kill Every Monster pin we've got left in stock.
The $2, $5, and $10 Patreon tiers are available with 7-day trials for new subscribers, so head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster and check out everything we have to offer at no cost to you.
Want a free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners. You can leave reviews for Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict.
Find all the ways you can support the show and leave us a review at patreon.com/killeverymonster.
My name is Aram. My pronouns are he and him. I'm the writer and producer of the Dungeons & Dragons podcast, God's Fall.
My name's Dylan. My pronouns are he, they, and I'm a physicist from Canada.
Welcome to Kill Every Monster. This week on Kill Every Monster, we are featuring the Periton.
Peritons are described in the Monster Manual as bizarre creatures that blend the body and wings of a bird of prey with the head of a stag. Its strangest feature is its shadow, which appears humanoid rather than reflecting the creature's physical form.
We are joined by Pooja. Pooja is a queer Indian-American actual play streamer, writer, and most recently voice actor, who loves using gameplay as a medium to challenge herself as an improviser, performer, and storyteller. You can find her on socials, at Pooja, Blue Sky and Twitter, at Pooja Walkie, everything else, or at PoojaVarta.com. Welcome to the show, Pooja.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
We are thrilled to have you and this weird bird monster.
There are a multitude of little monsters that hide in the Monster Manual and don't come out for adventures and nobody ever mentions. And I'm always so fucking excited when someone looks and goes, no, that little weird bitch.
I want to talk about that little monstrosity in the corner.
I want to talk about that awful little cretin.
For real, I've played a lot of random D&D one-shots, whatever you want to call it, but I've never had the opportunity to fight this little guy, and it kind of makes me sad.
I don't think I've ever once used him in a campaign, and I cannot think of a place where they have been in a story that I've read. I just know it as the creature in the Monster Manual.
So we're doing a fun thing where we're dancing around with the pronoun. We're calling it he and the little guy. Let's get explicit. Pooja, what's the Periton?
The Periton is, in D&D lore, a monstrous creature that has the body of a bird of prey of your choice and the head of a stag. So I like to call it a little deer bird. And that's all it really says. So you can make it as wild as you'd like to be. And I like to picture mine kind of in the way of the art as a rainbow-colored bird, because why not?
They are weirdly pretty, aside from the strange grinning deer
that
face
doesn't
they
help
put on this thing.
No.
It's a little unsettling.
I do like the idea of like a parrot.
Yeah.
With a big old stag head. Like, I like the idea of mixing up the birds.
I feel like if you ever saw one in the wild, you're just going to be so taken aback that the more outrageous and nonsensical it looks, the better.
I will say, I think the bird of prey aspect is sort of mandatory, just because, like, if you were to make this a parrot, just incongruous, nonsensical even.
How about hummingbirds? Like little angry hummingbirds with steer heads.
Oh, just my gosh.
Little flock of them.
Yes, but only if it's a full-size stag head.
Well,
it can't be, obviously, Dylan.
I know that. I want it to be an unsettling monster because that's the whole shtick here. This is...
Oh. I don't want just a head on the ground with this sad little body beating its wings desperately.
No. I think... No, because it's a weird monster, right? Yeah. So it doesn't have to abide by physics. Physics isn't real in D&D. You can cast Fireball.
That's true.
So you let it fly around, but you let it follow rules of momentum. Mm. So the head still like leads and sort of flops and drives a lot of the motion. But that's just going to make it so horrible to watch.
Yeah, no, I'm back on board now.
Well, but given that one of the attacks is a gore attack, like, I just love the idea of it maybe just being carried by the momentum of that stag head, and that's what does the damage rather than any conscious desire.
And to be fair, if I hurled a full-blown stag head at you, I can't throw that hard, but I'd still fuck you up.
Yeah. For sure.
I really don't understand the physics of that attack. I don't understand the physics of a flying creature ramming into you and then just continuing on its way.
Let's talk a little bit more about what this thing actually fucking is, because it is one of the handful of almost D&D originals. Like, this is...
Almost.
Almost. It's, what, a couple hundred years old as a concept. I think the French used it in coat of arms sometimes. But there's no, like, lore or meaning associated with it. They were just like, I don't know, deer bird, put it on there.
Yeah.
Right.
And then it was, like, in, what, the late 50s that it was actually pen to paper. Somebody was like, I don't know, let's explain this thing.
Jorge Luis Borges, in 1957, wrote a book, the translated name of which is The Book of Imaginary Beings. So it's a book full, it's a bestiary of made up creatures, and the Periton was one of the book, the creatures in there. And of course they, you know, tried to give it more gravitas by pretending that tales of the Periton were lost and found in old transcripts, but ultimately it was kind of all made up, it seems.
I put in a little bit of legwork on this one, and that was the same place I arrived at. There is just that French basis with absolutely no meaning, and this guy. And then Gygax is like, I don't know, that thing.
Having read the very short entry into that bestiary, I can see why you'd want to pull it, because it's just a fucked up little guy.
There are very few monsters that you can put in something and you're like, just, yeah, no, please kill that.
Yeah.
This is possibly the most intelligent, yes, you should kill that in the monster manual.
It is very frightening to have a creature that could talk to you, could reason with you, and chooses not to, but likes that it can understand what you're saying when you scream.
Yes!
That is a terrifying monster.
Yeah, not just common, but elvish too.
Yeah, it can't speak elvish back, but it knows. It must like to hurt elves. It just learned the language.
Yeah.
Also, the idea of, I know what you're saying when you're screaming, but you don't know that I know.
Imagine if you're dealing with this monster and you shout something in Elven and the head whips around as a reaction to what you said. Like, you know they know. In that moment, you know they understand you. That fear would be overwhelming, I think, at that point.
First things first, before we get into a little bit of that ecology, let's address the misogyny in the room. We have a monster that has no basis in anything, has no creation myth, has no reason to be. And what we get is a quick little blurb in there where it says, most scholars agree that it's just a made up thing. Some wizard was like, I don't know, fuck everybody, deer bird. But then the bards like to tell a story of a man who cheated on his wife. So his wife went out, murdered the woman he was cheating with, cut out her heart and consumed it. And that's where the first Periton came from.
Wow.
We still come back to just, oh, do we have a weird monster? Women. Right?
I know.
Don't you just hate it when they're deer birds?
Yeah, well, stop eating the hearts of your husband's lovers and we wouldn't have this problem.
This, at least in Indian culture and a lot of other cultures, I know there's monstrosity tied to, you know, women wronged, women scorned. But this isn't that. This is, hey, here's a fake animal, which even the Borges text does not say anything about this. While teleporting it to D&D, let's add some spice. I don't know what they're trying to do here.
The complete story is she cut out the heart, ate it, and then someone found out they hanged her, and the Periton or what happened to the carrion birds.
Who ate the corpse? Jesus.
Her hanged corpse, because her eating the heart was not just a weird thing she did. It was part of a dark magic ritual to cement her husband's love for specifically her. On its face, this isn't strictly sexist. It's just another time where the Monster Manual villainizes women. Mm-hmm. Sometimes women can be the villain. Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Where I call this absolutely misogyny is where they have the call out of the scorned wife cut out the heart of her younger, more beautiful rival.
Oh, wow. I didn't read that part.
Like, you fuckers.
Why is that there?
This went from being a, you know, women's rights and women's wrongs to a, oh, no, she was just a cranky, ugly old crone.
Yep.
And it's no reason for that.
So she ate a young woman's heart because it was the only way to make her husband love her, because otherwise she'd just be nagging him.
Yeah, that's 100% the vibe.
I bring up the misogyny of it all because the way that they reproduce has nothing to do with actual reproduction. Mm-hmm. They reproduce through consuming the hearts of humanoids.
So does it have to be these exact situations? Or if you eat a heart.
The next section is unnatural hunger. A Periton's reproductive cycle depends on the heart of a freshly killed humanoid. The organ must be consumed by a female Periton before she can reproduce. When it consumes a heart, the shadow changes for a brief time to reflect its true monstrous form. When attacking a humanoid, single-minded, relentless, eats monsters. So, we can, of course, give that the actual, it does need to reproduce. My initial reading, I misread half that sentence and I was just like, oh, so when it's ready to reproduce, it eats a heart and lays an egg.
That's what I was reading too. Yeah.
It sounds like on rereading, it may need to eat a heart, then fuck.
Oh.
Hearts are aphrodisiacs after all.
Before she can reproduce.
Yeah.
That could be interpreted as before she lays the egg or before she seeds the egg.
Is capable of doing.
Right. Yeah.
It's like an anti-condom.
it's just Fem Viagra.
Yeah.
Fem Viagra. I like the idea that it's afterwards and that the heartbeat doesn't start in the egg until she consumes a heart.
I like to ignore the bit with the before and just go like, no. When it's ready to reproduce, it eats the heart. Because that gives you an opportunity for, like, the ranger to notice something. Like, if you catch that it's a Periton, you just have it so that the lore is they don't eat hearts.
Until, right.
Yeah.
So when you've seen one, and then you go through the bodies, and you're like, huh, okay, so it's disemboweled and consumed. You know, this band of halflings wanted quick snacks, so, you know. And there's a heart missing. Oh, no, this is bad. There are going to be more. Especially if you make it something where it lays a clutch.
And the only hint you have that this change has happened in the creature is that its shadow changes. which is a very cool thing, by the way. Monsters should have more stuff like that.
I love this.
Very good lore.
And it does remind me of a, once again, going back to Indian folklore, the Chudail myth. Sometimes they say that, you know, her, you can tell that she's not a beautiful woman, is that her feet, if she lifts up her skirt, are backwards. Sometimes I've also seen depictions where it's her shadow has backwards feet. So it's like the shadow revealing the truth of the monstrosity that is not visible to the naked eye. I love that.
And it really gives a reason for, like, you know, casual perception checks.
As opposed, yes.
You know, like, it really adds, like, if you're in the middle of this thing's lair, but you're having a conversation with it, right, and everything's fine, but all of a sudden one of your characters notice the shadow has shifted. I mean, that's a very cool moment to be able to play out with your group.
Which also means that while you're talking, it is snacking on a heart.
Yeah.
Mid-conversation.
Yeah, it just has like a little glass and a straw. Having a casual chat with you. Little umbrella sticking out of it.
Because its reproduction is dictated by the consumption of a heart, it feels like that there's something there in terms of, like, that's not its shadow.
Yeah.
You know? Like, when it's normally flying around, like, it killed a guy and now it has its shadow because it came from the heart of that person. And then the only time it is truly a monster is when it's like, no, I'm going to make more of me. I'm going to kill a person on purpose, consume their heart to create more of this horrible monstrosity. And now my true form, my shadow, the thing that is reflected, is horrible monster.
Which, to me, begs the question, okay, so if this thing is flying around in the air, is it casting a humanoid shadow on the ground from the sky?
Well, with the arms out, mm-hmm. flapping, following it? Exactly. That's how it has to be.
It's the shadow of Superman, essentially, on the ground.
To be fair, it is like, I know the size is obviously absurd, but it's supposed to be a bird of prey, so typically it would just be gliding.
Yeah.
It'd flap every now and then, which is absolutely going to make it ridiculous. But normally it's just going to be a dude T-posing.
Yeah.
Just soaring around like that.
Which is clearly less ridiculous.
Well, and maybe that's its way of disarming its prey. It's like, is that like some sort of wizard flying around?
I guess in a D&D world, you might be slightly more accustomed to humanoid shadows that are flying. Because there would be more of them, but still, it must be a slightly unusual event, at least.
That's the last little bit of lore we have, is that they live in mountains and shit.
This thing needs a lot of thermals to get up in the air, so yeah.
Okay, picture the mountain from The Grinch. That's correct, as far as I'm concerned. Like, that horrible, sharp mountain, that whole perching on the edge and watching down, it like, fuck those people.
Well, and that goes with your concept of them being solitary.
And yeah, that's literally all there is to this monster. And I love basically all of it aside from the misogyny. This is one of the handful of times where I read an entry and, again,
yeah,
obvious exception, was just like, this is a weird thing. You haven't appropriated anything. You haven't done anything particularly horrible. I don't feel guilty killing this thing. It is just a weird, hyper-intelligent, for what it is, bird creature the size of a man. It is a medium creature. I don't know why I saw it in the monster manual and my immediate thought was, yeah, it's got to be like an eagle.
But no,
6 foot tall with antlers.
Yeah, it's like an ostrich that could fly with horns.
Well, because I'm assuming the horns have to add on to the medium size, right?
Yeah, so maybe they're like 5 feet tall, but still.
A horse and a deer are the same size category, right?
Yeah.
So the antlers clearly don't count.
That's what I think. And so that could add extra height, but also, like, you got to size the antlers for the 6 foot tall body.
Right.
Like, those antlers are probably...
So they're huge.
Well, I mean, aren't deer like...
That's a good point.
I don't know how tall a deer is. I feel like a deer is people height.
Yeah.
Like if it like got
if
up
it
on its back
on legs, its two
legs. I think you're right. Yeah. I think it's about people height. So maybe deer size antlers or rams. Like, I mean, it seems to like deer don't really ram with their antlers, right? It's more rams and other creatures with like bigger, thicker skulls and bigger horns. I'm sure deer fight with them.
So reindeer height, which is apparently Google's baseline deer,
when you Google height deer, that's they assume reindeer, is 85 to 150 centimeters.
Okay.
So 150 centimeters is like 5 feet tall. So you, realistically, if you're scaling up to a 6 foot tall creature, it's about the same size.
And I was just looking up stag antler pictures and they're big.
They're very big.
They're not
small. They're very big. Now, those are lock them up and try and like fight each other to the ground horns. If they're ramming horns, it's like their whole skull would have to be different and like.
No. They're not ramming horns, though. They're stag horns, right? They're lock them up horns, but they're also sharp horns.
Yes.
Oh, so they slash with them.
Like, look at this entire thing. They are goring creatures.
Yeah.
They are stab you creatures.
So they just have a giant muscular neck and then these razor sharp.
And then also wings.
And talons.
And talons. They're mostly sharp.
Right. What isn't feathers is sharp. That's basically what is going on.
The antlers and the talons.
The thing that you are warned about when you go out there. It's like, oh, don't go up in the mountains. There's peritons out in those parts. Like, peritone? What the fuck is a peritone? Oh, a horrible thing. It's a deer and a bird smushed together. The bits that aren't feathers are sharp.
Yeah.
Just don't go near them.
Also, like that beak, I'm looking at that beak close up now. There are teeth in that beak, right?
You keep calling it a beak. It's
that's a deer's head.
It's a deer's head. Okay. It just, it feels beak-like.
It doesn't have a beak. It has a mouth. It's a nose.
Those are teeth.
Well, aside from the weird deers that do have vampire fangs, but like,
are there deers like that?
Are you not aware of the weird vampire fang deer?
Deer vampire fang.
I'm looking it up.
Oh no. They look like orcs.
Oh. Oh, no.
It's like a little saber-toothed deer. I didn't know this existed. Look at that guy.
Oh, my God.
Oh, he's cute and terrifying at the same time.
Kind
of. It's really scary when they do the thing where they lick the side of their face and it comes out around the... Also, they've got a weird thing on the side of their... Yeah, they're weird-looking, dude.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
The very first picture I found in giant letters says, I swear I don't suck blood.
I saw that picture, too.
That is not convincing.
I don't believe you.
Is the Periton a monster?
Yes. I think this one is an unequivocal yes. And I love finding smushy bits of monsters and finding reasons for why they are what they are. But I think this one was just created to be the text says enemy of man. It attacks humanoids specifically with the intent to kill.
There is very little argument to be made there. Like, this is a thing that's created via murder.
Yeah.
It's just there to murder people, to live in the mountains, to be aggressive and do killings. Which, again, good D&D.
And, like, while it says that it needs to eat the heart to reproduce... The text doesn't say that that's the only time it wants to eat hearts.
That's true.
No.
It feeds on any creature and has an active preference for humanoids. And when you count all that together, active preference for humanoids, understands language, and, steals hearts and takes them back to eat them, it adds up to a picture of a monster.
Absolutely.
I like the idea that when it reproduces, it needs the heart of a bad person.
That's good.
Or a person that has just done bad. So therefore, they have to be created from hearts that are recently tainted or just fully tainted or have some anger or hate in them.
That's a nice thing to throw in with like the desperate trapped in the mountains type of trope.
Yeah.
But then my mind immediately goes to, what if there's a group of people and it has to taste test all of them to find one suitably corrupted?
It doesn't know.
It can smell it. Monsters can always smell your evil. They can smell your intention. They just have to get close enough.
Isn't that like the canonical sort of like watching an episode of Supernatural thing? Is like, how do we know this was a monster? Hearts are missing.
Yeah.
It wasn't hungry. It wanted a child. So now it's killing people and eating hearts.
Terrifying. And a great monster. And undoubtedly evil.
Yes.
Such a good, like, mission. To be like, no. We know there's a Periton up in the mountains. Please stop that.
in any organized society, they would know about these creatures. They are common enough. Once the first one gets out there, they can become common enough. I would have people trained. Like, we've talked about this before. Like, there would be a task team that would go out and take care of, like, wizards who have done bad things. This is certainly would be on the list of taking care of wizards that have done bad things. You can't have these things just multiply. If you find one, there's going to be 12. You've got to get rid of it.
Which begs the question, why don't we see them more in adventures?
The program was very successful. It was just one of those things. Everyone got on board. Screw this thing particular. All the orcs, all the humans, all the elves were like, yes, we can unify around this. That's why. It's a defective program.
They're also just so regionally locked.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be one of them out in the mountains. It's going to pick off people it needs to survive, even after it breeds. How long do these things live? I assume they're magic, so probably like 40 or 50 years. That's a hell of a long time for a bird or a deer.
Yeah.
But even then, like, how many are you going to have at once? You're never going to wind up with a flock, really.
I also think they would kill each other. I think you're right about them being solitary, and they'd be very, very, very defensive of it. So they might actually handle their own population a lot of the times by taking each other out.
Well, especially depends on how remote a location they're in. I know the text says that established settlements are attractive, but if you're in the mountains, there's not going to be that many of those, and then competition increases because there's only so many hearts out there.
Think like a peregrine falcon. They actually love cities because the skyscrapers emulate mountains for them. It's good enough. But you're not going to get like a peregrine falcon floating around like a 3-story town. So you're not going to get a parrot and just wandering into the nearest farming village because it's like, this will do, sitting on top a full 6-foot tall bird, deer, like man sized thing sitting on top of the tavern. Everybody's just looking at you.
We should probably deal with that.
So we're not going to that bar anymore, right?
Now that I think about it, if this is a creature that lives in the mountains, you would think it would be particularly dangerous for dwarves. Those are the people who would deal with the most. The people who live in the mountains.
That is a good point. But it knows Elvish and it likes elves particularly.
Right.
So that's an interesting choice to go for there.
That is weird.
I think that's just one of those things where anytime they invoke beauty, they go to elves.
Yeah.
Right.
This came from the heart of a pretty lady. Probably elves. I'm ignoring that.
It works a lot more if this starts from dwarves for some reason. I just like the idea of this starting from dwarves and plaguing dwarves, and then it spills over occasionally into people who move too close because we just expand. Humans just expand everywhere. And of course, they'll go live by the mountain that everyone says is cursed for 300 years. Of course we will.
And that's why the dwarves don't have an issue with them, because they know better.
Right.
Yeah.
They don't have that human hubris.
Right.
It's just that humans are kind of stupid.
Dwarves learn. It takes 300 years, but dwarves learn.
We've only got, 70, 80 years? Fuck it, just go.
If we just had another 130 years, we might actually learn something.
We might not be just terribly incompetent.
Although, honestly, if we're really going to say that, like, look at our aged leadership and how calcified they become. I think it would just be that and worse, sadly.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. To be slightly less depressing.
Thank you.
We'll move on to the last bit there. Pooja, is there anything you would change about the Peregrin in 5th edition?
If I had to pick, I would make it clear and just go all the way with the monstrosity and not necessarily have this whole reproductive thing dependent on eating hearts. I would be fine with it just liking hearts as a delicacy. You know, just taking any question out of it of the, we don't have to kill it if it's not in a reproductive phase, all of that stuff. Just let's go all the way. Let's make it a good time.
The hearts is good nutrients. They're driven to eat more hearts when they're going to reproduce for the energy. And humans interpret that as, it needs a heart in order to make a child.
Yeah, make it sort of a Volo thing.
Half of this could be blamed on Volo. Honestly, it's Volo's fault. Volo decided to add a bunch of shit that wasn't true, and now we just all believe it.
My only pushback on taking out the heart thing is I kind of like it for, explaining the whole the whole weird shadow thing. And also just, I will accept that some creatures are inherently magical. I feel like creating something where it reproduces through the consumption of something that symbolizes sort of the human soul and the capacity for love and compassion, something that breeds entirely by consumption of that, is an evil monster, and it makes sense suddenly that it has resistance to all of these weapons.
Yeah.
It's a bird. It's not resistant because it has a fucking hide. It's resistant because it's an evil witch deer bird.
It would limit their population some, which I think without it, they would just explode.
Well, again, if you have a hyper-aggressive territorial thing, like, it's not going to be particularly prone to breeding. And after it does, it's not going to be particularly prone to having a ton of offspring around.
Yeah.
The magical part of it is definitely strong. The whole, like, it needs that everything the heart represents to create more of its, to replicate its monstrosity. I think also I want something tying in the male Perritans.
Yeah.
And what do they do? Something specific about, do they also attack and kill humanoids? It's a little unclear.
Does there even need to be male Perritans?
I would argue that there doesn't need to be any sort of sex or gender in Perritans. They specifically have a stag head.
Right.
Yeah.
I think this is a genderless beast. Like, it has an implicit maleness to it.
We love asexual reproduction. Let's go for it.
I think that fits well for this creature.
It's just a weird bird thing.
It's not a female Perritan needs it to reproduce. All Perritans need to get a heart before they reproduce.
Do they then lay an egg then? Or is it some sort of like more visceral, like it's actually birthed out of the heart? Like they regurgitate the heart and then the heart's kind of like the baby already.
That is gory and amazing.
They do that whole hag thing where they ingest it, change it a bit, and then just vomit it back out, and it's what this is.
And then that weird, creepy, gory critter has the shadow of a humanoid baby.
Oh, that's so good.
I think you dodge the shadow bit because you make it something that people call a Perritan egg. You can make this something that's like magically charged, fantastic reagent. It horks back up the young, and that solidifies.
Oh.
It basically creates a cocoon around it. So it does eventually hatch. It does have an egg, but it's this weird, lumpy, misshapen, dried out husk that the thing just lives in for a couple of weeks.
I like that.
And then shatters out of, maybe a couple inches taller. Horrible. Awful. And then you pick up bits of that shell and you're like, yeah, this is good for magic because it's got compassion built into it. Make it a fucking healing reagent, just for contrast, you know?
Ooh, yeah. That's terrifying.
This is the leftover, digested remnants of a person's compassion.
Oh.
Jesus.
I love that. It could be strong depending on how compassionate that human instead of evil.
Yeah.
That was something I was kind of debating, was do we make it a reproduction via consuming evil people and getting hearts that are like it, or do you make it reproduction by finding a good person and killing that motherfucker?
Well, if a good heart is fuel to that fire.
They like hearts, they eat hearts, but when they want to reproduce, they have to find a truly good person to corrupt that heart. That's fantastic.
As much as I don't like that myth specifically for the misogyny tied up on it, it does pay, like, pay back into that if specifically it keys off of the heart of someone who's actually good. Where the curse isn't necessarily, oh, you're a horrible person and you did a murder and you did this magically. No, you found someone, your husband was awful. And your response to him being awful was for you to not just also be awful, but to be awful to someone who was good and undeserving of your malice.
That would limit the population because it's a lot harder to find a good person.
Yes.
Yeah, there's like 6 folks out there. It's fine. Most paladins are still dickheads.
I feel like you got clerics and a couple of druids.
You're going to be able to find them, right? You're definitely going to be able to find them, but you know, truly good people does limit how many you can have, and it does make them very monstrous, just absolutely monstrous.
If it is one of those things where you have to keep searching for the right heart, it could also fuel the reason to just kill indiscriminately, looking for that right heart to reproduce.
You don't know who's going to be good.
You could get a scent of it, an idea of it, but you're never sure.
You're never sure.
Until you tuck in.
And then you get in there and you're like, this isn't the one. Time to go again and again.
I mean, it was a good snack, but it's not the one.
Aram, what's going on? Why is all of our stuff in boxes?
Good news, Dylan. Dead Ghost Productions is moving.
What do you mean moving?
We're separating our patrons and launching a new Dead Ghost page to provide our listeners with more content and a clean RSS feed for all their podcasts. Stacy is helping us out with the heavy stuff.
She's a bit clumsy.
Okay, so that makes sense, sort of. What about the people who have already subscribed?
I've got it handled. Everyone who is currently subscribed to our Dead Ghost Productions level or our combined feeds level will get a free month once we split the feeds on June 1st. If you're signed up for a yearly subscription, you'll get just as many free months on our new Dead Ghost feed as you currently have left on that subscription.
Okay, so what do people have to do in order to make the switch?
It's easy. Everyone will get a link to activate their free subscription sent directly to their email. They just need to follow that link to the new Dead Ghost patron and they'll be all set. The changes won't start until June 1st, and if anyone has questions about it, they can email us at killeverymonster@gmail.com or deadghostproductions@gmail.com. They can also message us directly in Patreon.
Okay, this better not interfere with my experiments, Vardian.
Don't worry, Dylan. I've told Stacy to stay clear of your laboratory. How do we safely power down the nuclear generator again?
Aram, what was that?
Good news. I found a dragon.
No, you didn't. Dragons aren't real, Aram.
Oh, they are quite real, Dylan. And very clumsy.
All right, I'll play. Why did you bring a dragon here?
What better way to promote Kill Every Monster than with an actual dragon? We may need to pump up the Patreon just a little.
For $2 a month, supporters on patreon.com/killeverymonster get access to ad-free episodes as they're released. For $5, you'll get them early along with audio DMs notes featuring Aram and I discussing how we made each episode.
For $10 a month, you'll get audio and video DMs notes along with extended cutting room floor content that didn't quite make it into the main episode.
We also have a $25 investor level and a $50 producer level. Support at these tiers ensures we can continue to produce Kill Every Monster and allows us to hire more talent from the community. Both levels get a personalized shout-out at the end of every episode, and producers get a welcome pack of each official Dead Ghost and Kill Every Monster pin we have left in stock.
The $2, $5, and $10 patron tiers are available with a 7-day free trial for new subscribers. So head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster and check out everything we have to offer at no cost to you.
Want another free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners. You can leave reviews for Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict.
Find all the ways you can support the show and leave us a review at patreon.com/killeverymonster.
It is late. We're talking about like 2-3 in the morning. It is dark as shit. Everybody is either going home or too drunk to manage the rest of the trip.
This is like a one inn sort of town, I'm picturing.
I'm imagining a bit more of a city. Because you
are coming out of a back alley entrance to the bar at which you were performing. And I want to know, first off, what is your, and I'm going to regret saying this word, art?
Oh, well, I am a man of many talents. Well, not a man. I am a satyr of many, many talents. Singing, dancing, tax preparation. Tonight, however, I was doing my variety show, where it's a little bit singing, a little bit of audience participation, a little bit
of tax preparation, yeah.
Really, that's just a side gig. Tonight, it was mostly singing and magic.
How did it go?
Well, you know what? Let's find out. I will roll performance.
Good call.
I'm imagining it's the end of tax season and it's a blowout.
That is a 17 plus 7, 24.
Oh, yeah. Then it was fantastic. And this would explain why you're probably a little bit tipsy. Because this was one of those shows that at the end of it, everyone is going to buy you a drink. There's a bunch of wizards out there who are going how did you do that? Because half of it is actually magic and the other half is sleight of hand. And that's where the real kind of surprising shit hits.
Right. I was a little drunk trying to explain it. Well, you see, and I would just drop stuff and everyone would get a good laugh.
No, you're only good when you're on stage, of course.
Plus, I would just lie. I'm not going to share my secrets.
No, God. And is there anything more satisfying than lying to wizards?
Oh, it's the best. They really just get so upset.
Yeah.
Just insist that all knowledge should be shared, blah, blah, blah.
Fuck off. Trying to get actual publications in, wizarding journals that are just wrong. Just to fuck with them.
Do you know how many wizards have talked to me, and yet I've never seen a byline? But they always want the information.
Do they even name you as a source?
No, of course not. No, it's just some satyr. That's what I get.
Some guy.
To be fair, if I were talking to a guy in a bar, I wouldn't know how to write that citation.
Zanzibar the Zenith. It's clearly written on all my cards.
Well, Zanzibar, at the end of the night, a little bit tipsy, a little bit, a little bit worn out, as mentioned, end of tax prep season, so you've been working your ass off in the day job, now you're coming out to the night job, and now everybody's celebrating. A little bit exhausted, you stumble out into the dark. In the dark, a little ways above the city. I want to know, first off, Pooja, where are you roosting for the moment?
I'm hungry, so I have come down from the mountains where I usually am, right out to the city. I imagine the city might be nestled in by some big mountains.
Maybe just a little ways outside of the mining towns. The first place that all the ore has to pass through when it's actually getting sold to somebody.
Yes, exactly. The processing center.
Trade town.
Also a place where generally you can find a meal. And because I'm assuming we've got a working population kind of passing through, maybe something seasonal. Not a lot of fallout from it. It continues to be a good hunting ground. So I imagine about halfway up the mountain is where I'm roosting. Someplace where I can have a good look at what's out there. What's good prey for me. I don't have any sort of dark vision, but I do have advantage on perception checks. So I still have a good keen sight and smell, even though I don't have dark vision. So with the artificial lighting all over town, it makes it possible to hunt at night.
Speaking of which, drunkenly out of the bar, once I step into the darkness, I cast dancing lights and I'm just, the globes can go out 60 feet and come back. So every time they come back, I just grab them and toss them like those little hover balls they sell to kids that'll come back. So I'm just playing with the balls.
And that makes it rather easy to find prey. You don't want to go for someone who's too stationary, because that means if they're out in the road, they're just out in the road. If anybody walks by, you're screwed. This guy, there is a bright glowing beacon wandering kind of through back alleys, lighting his way. Every once in a while, you see he's throwing these little motes of light, and you watch another person coming home from a very good night suddenly just fall over trying to get out of the way of an immaterial object.
Sorry there, my friend. They're harmless, I assure you.
Okay. Just, it's very dark out. Can you not? And it's one of those things where, like, every once in a while, there's somebody who's yelling at you like you're the asshole.
Like, I'm the asshole.
You're helping. It's dark out.
As I'm juggling.
As you're almost blinding people as they go. As for me, the creature, I love it when my prey lights itself up. It's, you know, it's like a big pick me sign right over tonight's dinner.
So, I want to know first from you, Aram, your route. Are you the sort of person who's going up the main street, or are you taking the most direct route, winding through the alleys? Or do you have like a couple of places that, are you not taking the, you're not going home right now? You're wandering through the park and over to the lake and whatever.
I would say he's taking the main road back home because one, it's easy. And two, you know, he's a man who likes to be seen. He is a little tipsy. He has his juggling balls out. Clearly, it's just for my own entertainment. But should anyone see me? Oh, what a fine juggler. So I believe, yes, he's just parading down the main street, juggling his light balls.
Then Pooja, I want to know, what's the plan? How do you follow?
What I'm looking for from my vantage point up above is when this delightfully fuzzy satyr passes an intersection where there is a big enough side street for me to make an attack from the side, because I've been hunting here long enough to know what a main road means and how, you know, there's chances where we might be disturbed or something like that. So I kind of want to find a place where I can swoop in and maybe push him into a side alley that is big enough for me to fit. Because I believe I'm a big guy.
You are a strong deer thing.
Yes. Yeah. I'm a strong deer bird.
Yes.
Once I get that little intersection spotted in, I am going to swoop directly in. I come in with a multi-attack. I have a dive attack and I got flyby. So basically coming in from above quietly and fast is my go-to surprise move.
So we see, like, from the top of another building, you just watching him panning along the road. And then when he starts to get near the road, it's that little hop and the little flap to kind of keep yourself upright. Everybody has seen like a robin moving along the ground. We're now watching this, I'm going to say 6 foot tall, horrifying monster pull the exact same little hop and flap trick to just steady yourself like right across the road and wait. First thing I want is oppose stealth and perception. Aram, you're the perception side of this.
Okay, my perception is +4. Which gives me a total of 4 + 4 = 8. Because I am tipsy.
Nice. Well, I rolled an 18 on the die, +1 for dex. So that's a 19 on stealth.
Then Aram, you're going to roll at disadvantage.
La, la, la. Hey, what lovely architecture. What am I rolling for?
I think it's going to have to be an opposed strength.
Okay.
For just a full-blown bull rush.
Mm-hmm.
I have a +0 at strength, so that is going to be 8 + 0 = 8.
Oh, well, you know, I rolled a 4 on the dice, so it's just a 7.
Oh!
So I can't bull rush you, but I will use my flyby and immediately fly to a rooftop nearby so that I can A, be out of your reach, but B, plan another dive at you.
Yeah, I did that drunken thing where, like, you know, they never get hurt in a car wreck. I just, like, whoa, I was just so loose.
You're just so loosey-goosey in your body.
You got hit and bowled over, essentially.
Exactly. La-ti-da-ti-da.
The question is, do you know what happened?
On an 8 perception, it is legitimately like,
I think it's a deer.
You got hit by a fucking truck all of a sudden and nothing is there by the time you come up, because it came at you completely perpendicular. You weren't looking.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gone down this side street, which is not where you're throwing your lights.
I would gather myself and I would just like, and then send the lights out so that they're like, start to illuminate.
I'm going to say that the lights, like when you were hit, they did hit the ground and bounce and roll like actual balls until you like flick your hands and suddenly they just shoot directly up because they are actually fully immaterial and they are just constructs you're able to shift with your mind.
There you go.
And I'm slowly pushing them into the darkness of the alley as I'm getting onto my feet.
Okay, so before I even ask you for a perception check, Aram, would it occur to you to look up?
Well, no, because the thing went past me, so I'm assuming it went into the alley.
Okay, then I'm gonna let you roll this. You're rolling perception at disadvantage. Yep. I'm gonna let the 19 stand for stealth.
Okay, so that is going to be a total of 2 plus 4 is 6.
You send it down there and you see like there is a dog like just laying in the corner, just up against the wall, looks entirely content. This might be a stray dog. It is a well-fed dog. The dog seems entirely happy with its night. It is too stationary for the dog to have been responsible for what happened.
Well, all right. But okay, I think I'd pull the lights in so that they're very, very close, just kind of like around me, just like a little safety blanket. And I would, you know, kind of like look around and be a little bit more aware as I began heading home.
Pooja, what is your plan for a second pass?
Well, the second the satyr starts walking again, I'm going to come in. And this time I'm not going for a flyby. I'm going in to knock him to the ground. I'm going to try to, I'm going to go in for a proper attack. I'm going to dive in and do actually start this fight.
Yeah. All right.
It's a brawl time, baby.
Yeah.
That's fair. Okay. Then I think that's the same thing. It's going to be just oppose strength. Aram, I think you can do acrobatics against this one.
Oh, I can do acrobatics.
Yeah, I'm looking at the rules for shoving, and it is, it's opposed versus strength or dexterity.
Okay. Ooh, that is a natural 20 plus 4 is 24.
Well, yeah, that's going to beat my 17.
It's fucking rude.
Well, you didn't expect a back handspring, darling. That was the problem.
I will snap my teeth at you.
I actually get to do like a full standing back handspring because of my little satyr legs. He has something called mirthful leaps where he is allowed to leap higher than other creatures. So you just didn't expect these little spring legs.
That was it. You were fully, like a 17, you were fully successful in knocking him down from behind. It's just it turned into a forward roll and then there was a little hop. Did like a,
boing.
You know, it's the triple jump from Mario 64.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Suddenly just lands upright, arms up.
With my hands like, oh, no, I'm facing something now, right? I can see the creature now. What am I seeing?
You see this red and blue and white, beautiful bird with a horrifying deer head, bloodshot eyes, massive antlers, and I don't know if there's enough light for you to catch anything in the shadows yet, but what you're looking at looks wrong. And it's mad at you.
He pops to his feet, he faces the creature down, stares it right in the eye, sees it for what it is, and runs away.
Roll for initiative.
Oh, that's terrible. It's a 5.
That is going to be a 6 plus 3 is 9.
you both like have, there's a long moment of just what the fuck before you can even conceive to run away. That being said, like, you stop in like a showy pose. And
yeah,
it's the hands up. Like, it triggers the animal brain of like, this is something making itself imposing. This is about to attack. And that confusion is just long enough for you to turn and start to run, Aram.
I'm just going to disengage and run. Yeah.
You can make it. You're 30 feet back down the road.
35 feet. I run at 35 feet because of my little springy legs. Click, 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 click. Just these little hooves sprinting along the cobblestone.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no.
A monster. A monster. Click, 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 click.
I wasn't done with you. And so I am going to hop. I have a fly speed of 60. I'm flying after you. With my action, I'm going to take my multi-attack.
I have an AC of 13.
The way this works, though, I have a gore attack and a talon attack, and then it says I didn't get high enough to fly because I was basically flying kind of parallel to the ground because you were running away. So no dive attack this time, but just a regular multi attack. So the gore attack is a 17 to hit, and the talon attack is 18 to hit, and they have different damages. The gore attack has a 1d8 plus 3.
It's 1d8 plus 2d4 plus 6 total.
Oh!
So 15 damage total.
15 damage. It's all piercing. That matters.
Yes, it hurts rather a lot. And I am bleeding quite profusely.
The head comes down. It catches you as it passes. And it's while the rest of the body goes over you, after the antlers have raked your back. The claws just barely catch on your shoulders as you're sort of stumbling. You're shorter than most of the people in town, so the calibration's a little off.
I still have movement left because you're 35 feet away. I'm going to use the flyby ability and fly out of your reach without provoking an attack of opportunity.
How far does that put you away from me?
You have 25 feet of movement remaining.
25 feet, yeah.
Oh, Lord. Okay. So I just got struck for basically half my hit points in one strike. He could stand and fight, but he won't. And instead, he is going to panic, like, ah, and slap his hands against his chest and turn invisible.
Okay.
And then he is going to stop. Like, he's going to gather all of his, you know, wits about him and all of his courage. And he's going to not run and create a bunch of noise. He's going to stop invisible, try and control his breathing, and try and very carefully and quietly, like, step out of the main street and into a side alley. Click. Click. Fucking hoops.
Do they go clop, clop a little bit as you go?
A little bit.
Yes, of course they do. It's like, oh, it's like he's trying very hard to like step on the grass, you know.
Do you have the equivalent of horseshoes on your hooves?
He must have some sort of like fancy silvered little, you know, shoes, basically. Okay. Yeah, I would think so. Maybe even like little leather booties. Maybe he would like, you know, tie over them like
you're... I was imagining maybe some like rhinestones.
Either way, he's ill-equipped for this.
Yes, when your job is to be loud and ostentatious, suddenly you're trying to sneak.
Yeah.
Aram, I was gonna give you the full advantage because, you know, you're, of course, invisible. I'm gonna have you roll your straight stealth on this because you're actively clicking and clacking along.
Sure.
This was your choice. I'm just following your instructions.
That is 16 plus 3 is 19.
Ooh, oh, very nice.
Pooja, if you would like to roll a perception, you have advantage on this because you have keen senses, which includes smell.
All right, let me do that. Ooh, okay, so that is a 17 with the advantage, plus perception is 5.
For a total of 22.
What gives me away?
Oh, you smell like food.
Yeah, and I'm bleeding.
You've been in a bar. You got fucking... You were being fed. Like, that is part of the deal, is I perform, I get a cut of the door, and I get a meal.
I smell like whiskey and meat right now.
And also, you're my marked prey now. Like, I've already attacked you once. Like, it's gonna be hard for you to shake me off.
Right.
With the Periton, that's the thing, is that they don't give up. Once you're marked, I'm coming for you, and there is no choice but to kill you and take your heart.
Pooja, you have, I'm gonna say, a good enough bead on him to know where he is. He is invisible, so you're still gonna have disadvantage on attack rolls against him. That sound fair?
Yeah, of course.
That being said, he's also 60 feet away, because you move at speed. You were 25 feet away from him, so it's a net 60 feet.
Okay.
I'm not doing any Pythagoras shit.
Yeah, no.
Leave me alone, audience.
I would have taken the clearest path away from the monster, so that does make sense.
So I did mention I was up in the air, so if I go straight for him, would I get the dive attack this time?
Yes.
All right, I'm...
You're 25 feet up, and he's 35 feet lateral. It'll work. You'll dive for more than 30 feet total.
Let's see if anything hits with the disadvantage. All right, disadvantage for the gore. The lower roll is a 12 plus 5, so 17 on the lower roll.
It does hit.
And the talons... Oh, okay, well, that one's probably not going to hit, because the lower roll was a 2, so it's only a 7 total.
Yeah.
So you get one attack.
My visibility drops, right?
No.
Oh.
It's a concentration effect. It's as soon as you attack or cast a spell.
Gotcha. Okay.
So we're going to find out how much damage you take first.
The regular damage, you take 7 piercing damage from the gore, from the antlers. It makes sense. They're big. That they probably found better purchase somewhere at the Invisible Satyr compared to the talons. But with the dive attack, I do an extra 2d8 damage.
Okay.
So that's 5 on the first and 4 on the second. So an extra 9 damage.
So you crash into him. You both go tumbling into this alley. I didn't make that concentration check. My invisibility drops. I am ripped and bloodied. My eyes are panicked. I clearly am not long for this world. And just out of absolute sheer terror, he whispers a few words in Elven and slams his hands together to create a thunder wave.
Tampa Tanya.
Ooh.
The only offensive spell he has. That is going to be a saving throw constitution, which you're probably good at, 13.
And it is directly on top of you at the moment.
Yeah.
Like, that was the entirety of her move speed, was this thing slamming bodily into you. In all likelihood, the extra damage is that it didn't know where you were. So you probably took the gore attack as piercing damage, and the dive attack was probably straight bludgeoning as an entire massive bird rams into you.
When a deer slams into you, it's gonna hurt. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Cars lose that fight.
I was gonna say, we know what happens when cars make into that fight. All right, so on the con save, I actually only have a plus 1 to con, but I did roll a 16 on the die.
Ah, okay, so that'll be half damage. And that means that you take, and you don't get knocked back, which is the saddest part, because I really was hoping to send you flying. But that is going to be a total of, well, that's a low roll too. 12 minus in half is 6 points of damage.
And that's thunder damage, right?
That is thunder damage, correct.
All right, so I take all of it.
All right, that is my second, I have one more second level slot, that's it. All right, and then, I mean, he can't run, because he'll invoke an attack of opportunity. He can't. Oh, gosh. Maybe it would just be like, you know, friends?
What you're looking at is a giant, sharp, chipped tooth grin of horror. I don't know. I think I'm a little pleased you're playing back.
He's going to billow his cloak of billowing and be as big and loud as he could be, because it's a creature. So he thinks like with a bear, like, roar, just makes his cloak go really big behind him.
I'm going to have you roll an animal handling.
Okay. I actually have some skill in that. That is a 19 plus 3 is 22.
Wow.
Pooja, I'm going to let you just feel that out. Like, I don't want to impose anything on you. It's just, as much as the Periton has, like, a 9 intelligence, it is a person intelligence. Mm-hmm. It is also an animal in a lot of ways. So I'm going to leave that to your judgment as far as, like, how you take that. Or if this is just one of those things where he does that and you're like, yeah, that would work on a deer.
It would work on a deer. The only problem is I have an unnatural hunger. And when attacking a humanoid, I am single-minded and relentless, fighting until either I or my prey dies.
Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't pay a lot of attention in the whole monster part of school. I never planned to leave the town. I'm not a traveling bot. I have a local fandom. So unfortunately, I did not get to the peas in the monster book. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you had, you would know that the best case scenario is that if you get away, I will continue to stalk you from afar if I'm still alive until the next opportunity. Like, we're in it. We're in a blood feud now.
Yeah, I didn't read that part. It was so boring, and it was very nice outside.
That being said, you rolled a 19 on animal handling, and so I think maybe I think of you as kind of a competent prey. Maybe a little bit of let's play with my food tonight. So I think that probably...
Great.
I will keep engaging with you because I have to do that. Like, but, you know, it's like instead of making it short and quick, let's have some fun. So I think maybe on my turn, I would only take one attack instead of both. Kind of prolonging this a little bit just for both of our entertainment.
Yep.
All right, so I will just take one gore attack. It's two little hearts on my die. That's a natural 20.
Yeah, that's going to hit.
Okay, that's going to be 2d8 plus 3.
I do like this idea of him just like, ooh, and then just shunk.
So I got a 5 and a 3, so that's 8 plus 3.
All right, that hit me hard. I've got like 2 hit points left.
This is not even like the gore attack. This is you rear back and you see the thing like rear back and you think for a second that you've actually intimidated this thing. No, fuck off. It just comes back down and headbutts you. Like, it doesn't even catch you with the fucking horns. You've got your little fucking satyr nose caved in by the forehead of a deer.
So just he's out of tricks. He's backed against a wall.
For the record, Pooja, technically, since you attacked, your flyby, or I guess, strictly speaking, flyby always works.
Oh, it does.
But yeah, so you can just like leave them room to go.
You know, or you can. I did say I was gonna play. I think we're wrestling a little bit.
Yes.
Let's wrestle.
All right. Then out of absolute panic, he turns, he very quickly grabs a pack of playing cards out of his pocket, whispers a few words, and fires them all off. Now, here's what I'm doing. I am casting Spray of Cards, which you need a deck of cards as the thing to cast the spell. I want to use my deck, my special deck. I want to use my deck of illusions as the spray. So I want to cast the spell and just hurl the entire deck of illusions out there as I do it.
So here's how that's going to work. First things first, what save is Pooja making?
You are making a save as the cards explode out of my hand. You are making a dexterity save, DC 13.
Okay, well, I have a dex of 1. And that's a 3 total, so I fail that.
Oh, something landed. Okay.
Yep.
Do your damage.
2d10 force damage, which is going to be a total of 12.
All right. So I have total 18 damage right now.
All right. And you have the blinded condition until the end of your next turn because all the cards got in your face.
In addition to that, because this is a deck of illusions, immediately, all over the place, red dragon, guard, knight, a dog, a cow, a small horse pulling a carriage.
Dylan's just calling sound effects that I'm going to have to queue up.
Amazing.
A guy who hates Aram and is just saying shit like, fuck Aram, Aram's an asshole.
Are the illusions visual only?
They are. Arguably, they might have sound. But you're blind.
But I'm blinded. That's what I was going to say.
Right?
Yeah.
Is that, can I even see them?
No.
I'm going to quickly check.
Do illusions work on the blinded condition?
An illusionary creature appears real, of the appropriate size, and behaves as if it were a real creature, but can do no harm. You can see it. It doesn't say anything about making noise.
Physical interactions with blah, blah, blah.
It just says it behaves.
So the deck of illusions doesn't say anything specifically about making noise. I'm going to rule that it does.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I think it's full hologram effect, because otherwise, like, summoning a red dragon in silence is already a dead giveaway.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Yeah.
So you've got all this shit popping off.
One of them's a joker just so it can be an exact duplicate of me. Wow, you look wonderful. Well, thank you. I've had better nights.
So the thing is, I think based on what the spell is, it's all of them.
It's all of them, yeah.
Mm.
Kobold, hill giant,
troll,
iron golem,
frost giant,
a lich, a priest and two acolytes. Literally everything.
Amazing.
And part of why this clearly wouldn't work, even if it was visual, is these things are overlap. You're in a small side
street.
They're
all street. Clipping into each other.
So all of them are... Exactly. Pooja, immediately, you are blinded. You hear a vague cacophony that sounds fundamentally impossible. It's too many sounds. It's too loud. For that to be possible, there would have to be, I don't know, just off the top of my head, 34 cards in full
34.
Deck. 34 creatures all existing in the same space.
Wow.
Not actually possible. However, in that, you can also hear the far more reasonable shouts of, what the fuck is that? From outside the alley.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, fair.
Aram, you've cast your spell. What do you want to do with the rest of your turn?
Did I hear someone yell?
Give me a perception check because...
Okay, fair. Because there's so much that's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
19 plus 4 is 23.
Ooh.
Yeah, you heard it. Somebody is coming.
I want to run towards that person, screaming for help.
Pooja, you get the attack of opportunity. It's at disadvantage, right? Because you're blinded.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's go.
I'm fucked like a dip.
And just to confirm, because it's been a long time, when you get an attack of opportunity, it's only one of your possible attacks.
It's only one,
right?
Attack.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll go for the gore with a disadvantage. My lower die was a 9 plus 5, so 14 to hit.
That does hit, sadly. Yep. That just hits me.
All right.
So. The screaming starts and you start running. You start yelling for help. And if it weren't the gore attack, this would have no chance in hell. But it is a full rack of antlers as you try to move by it in a thin side street. And it just whips its head to the side. The first half of it, like the first half of the rack, hits you to the side and bumps you against the wall. It's the second half that finds home and stabs into you when you're pressed up against a wall and there is no falling back out of it.
With my fingers at the edge of the alley, just reaching around as my hand goes limp.
Someone sees this. The guards start being called. People are screaming. Pooja, you have your turn.
Mm-hmm.
You're currently blinded.
Yep.
You can hear people screaming. You understand common, so
yeah.
You know they're calling for the guards. You know people are here and can see you. People are calling for help, and it is going to get ugly fast. What do you want to do?
Is the satyr stuck to my antlers?
I'm impaled.
I'm going to say no.
You're impaled, but you are not stuck. Okay, well, we're going to try to go straight for the heart. I'm here for one purpose only. I need that heart. If it helps, Durham, you're going to help perpetuate my species. That's a noble cause.
I am greatly unconscious due to blunt force trauma and blood loss, so I have little I can do to fight it.
I'm going to roll. Well, honestly, so, you know what?
Yeah, because I think you said you had 2 hit points,
right? I did until you hit me with this attack. You haven't rolled damage yet.
Yeah. Well, I did. I rolled max damage on that.
Oh, I'm so dead.
So 11 HP of damage on that killing blow.
Okay, you're super dead. Pooja, high or low for whether or not the guards will arrive this turn?
Let's go low.
I rolled a 13.
Oh!
People are screaming, and your immediate reaction to this is on your turn to start digging for the heart.
Mm-hmm. Do the illusions vanish because I died, or because it's an item, do they just keep going?
No, they're an item. They persist.
Ah.
They last until, specifically, it's until they are dispelled.
Oh, my.
Oh.
Or until the card is moved.
Okay.
And they say they act like the creatures they are, so I'm assuming they're reacting to each other.
Yeah.
Right?
It's like a big conversation between a kobold.
Except they're inside each other as well. Like, there's a kobold yelling at an orc because you're standing on me, except the kobold is fully upright.
Right, inside it.
Its head is inside, like, the left hip bone of the orc.
There's a hill giant constantly stomping on it on a goblin, but nothing's happening. It's just going right through him every single time.
Yep. It's an absolute clusterfuck. There is no other way to describe it.
But it's enough to keep the guards busy while she guts me.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, not even the guards busy. It's enough that no one's 100% sure what the fuck is happening.
Who says I'm real?
Is the bird deer guy real? Right. We don't know.
Why would you think it was? Why would you think the one thing would be real amidst everything else, right?
Yeah. Like, people are coming, and they're calling for the guards because something is going on. Something is wrong. But no one is sure what is going on. And while they're calling for the guards, they're like, I don't know. I think someone is in there. Pooja, you get to make both your attacks this round.
Okay.
You're blind.
Yeah.
But because Aram is incapacitated, you have advantage. So it's going to cancel out to 2 straight rolls.
Okay, well, I think at this point, working with the blinded condition, we're just going pure instinct. And so I think the gore attack is going to be to really, like, get an idea of where you're situated without being able to see you. And then the talon attack is going to be more concentrated on, like, getting my prize out of the chest.
Fair enough.
So, yeah, gore is just
the
more
slam
like...
slam the antlers back into the wall to kind of get a feel for where he is.
All right, so that was a 16 on the gore.
Yeah.
That is automatically a hit, which is automatically a crit,
correct,
which means it's 2 failed death
correct
saves.
2 failed death saves.
Cool.
I rolled a 22 on the talons.
That'll also weigh hit.
Yeah, so you slam him into the wall and get a good feeling for where it is. This is the point where someone in the crowd is like, hold on, those two are touching. And the moment they say that, you manage to pry your head back. A foot comes up and just... Talon full dives into his chest and tears. Aram, you've had 4 failed death saves.
Yes, that's all of them, I believe. Plus one.
Your next character is going to start with 1 failed death save. No, sorry, it's just a roll over.
No, it's absolutely not an exceptional thing
that's
to do.
That's amazing,
no.
though.
You tear into him and you hear him scream. And as you kind of pull this hole and you feel your talon, your claw close around the heart, you pull back as you feel it stop beating.
Mm. And so I'm overcome with a sense of peace. My objective has been satisfied. My folk will go on.
Your heart will go on. My heart will go on.
Yeah. Yours will.
But yes. Well, your heart will go on to do good things. I'm going to, since it's still my turn, I still have my movement. My turn hasn't ended, so I still cannot see. But I know enough to know to go straight up. I am yeeting myself out of there.
It is a huge, powerful flap of those wings.
flying up through the holographic neck of a red dragon bursting out through its mouth.
Through holographic flames holding this heart.
Yeah.
And the moment you crest over that, that's the point where the guards notice and arrows start flying. But you are too high. And they are ill-trained city guards. They're just firing at this thing way the fuck out there. No lights, into the darkness. A couple crossbow bolts come close enough for you to notice them. But as your vision recovers, you see two panicked men and then three guards, one of them a halfling, firing a crossbow bolt nowhere near you as you return to the mountains.
If he had the extra 2 feet, he might have gotten a shot off.
Yeah.
Because of that, I am glad that I get my vision back after the end of my turn so that I can appreciate the cacophony that I was hearing before. Just what was all of that?
There's a lot of shit going on.
For the record, so how big is a fucking alleyway? What, like 15 feet wide, maybe?
Yeah, it depends if it's a major thoroughfare or not, or if there's a lot of trucks that you back up into. But yeah, 15 feet seems reasonable.
You look back as you're leaving and see, top to bottom, a red dragon, knight and four guards, a succubus or incubus, a druid, a cloud giant, an end, a bugbear, a goblin, a beholder, an archmage and mage apprentice, a night hag, an assassin, a fire giant, an ogre mage, a gnoll, a kobold, a lich, a priest and two acolytes, Medusa, a veteran, a frost giant, a troll, a hobgoblin, a regular goblin, an iron golem, a bandit and captain and three bandits,
Yar!
An Aranyas, a berserker, a hill giant, an ogre, an orc, and a kobold.
And then also me.
There are also two jokers. They're both
two knees down there having a little hollow conversation.
Well, hey, at least you left something behind of yourself.
As the last card floats down and lands at their feet, and it's my business card. And I'm going to hit stop.
A worthy opponent.
Not really.
Not really.
Thank you for joining us for The Periton. For more information about us, show notes for each episode, and ways you can help support the podcast, head over to killeverymonster.com.
If any of the ideas we've discussed in this episode have sparked some of your own, tell us about it on Blue Sky at killeverymonster.com. You'll find me at djmelonfont.bsky.social and Aram at aramvardian.com.
For ad-free episodes, early releases, print-ready maps, plus audio and video supporter exclusive bonus content and cutting room floor clips, head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster. You can also listen to ad-free episodes and bonus content by subscribing to the show on Apple Podcasts.
Our intro theme and many of the sound effects you hear in the show were created by BattleBards. Check them out at battlebards.com.
This episode was produced by Aram Vartian and Dylan Malenfant. I also did the editing. Our guest was Pooja. You can find Pooja on Blue Sky at pooja.bsky.social. And if you're like me and all that information just fell right out of your head, you'll find everything you need at killeverymonster.com.
And we'll see you next time for
Kill Every Monster.